I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. Summer is a lovely time for families. Longer days, warmer water, sunshine, swimming and holidays. What's not to love? Well, I hate to be Captain No Fun, but summer's also a time when accidents rise in children. And so today on The Parenthood, I've got Dr. Kiara Hunt, my sister and co-founder of The Parenthood, and we're going to talk to you about what you can do to keep your child safe in the summer. Kiara, welcome. Thanks for your time.
No problem.
Starting with the kind of thing that all parents, you know, fear the most, drowning. I read actually the other day that nearly all drowning incidents occur during a brief lapse in supervision. It's when we think we're keeping an eye on the children, but suddenly we've got distracted. So, I mean, water safety is a big part of keeping your child safe in the summer, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's about being prepared and, you know, being organised and making sure that without question your child is you know, monitored, observed, supervised and has all the right buoyancy devices, and you know, your pool has all the right protections on it, because it can happen so quickly and without you noticing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's silent drowning, which is sort of the scariest thing. In terms of keeping our children safe, I mean, I think that kind of basic pool safety, you know, if you're going away on holiday, ensuring that the pool is, you know, either away from the house and sort of fenced in or has one of those sort of fences around. I mean, I personally would just not go with my toddlers to a place where the water was unprotected. And if there was ever a point you take your eyes off the children, they could be in the pool. I mean, I think it's essential, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it just completely ruins your holiday if you can't be sure that your child can play, you know, without the risk of falling into a pool, not just a pool, but also ponds or any smaller bits of water that might be around the area you're in. So, you know, nowadays, a lot of pools have these covers that are properly safe, you know, that you could fall onto and not go underneath. Or there's pool alarms, of course, will alarm if anything touches it. I think there's even devices that your child can wear that I think we use those for ours when they were little, that they, you know, if they fall in water, then that alarms, or if they go underwater, that alarms, you know, the fences. But make sure if it's fenced, the pool, that it's actually locked and the child isn't able to unlock it, because, you know, a 3-year-old perfectly capable of either climbing over a fence or undoing a bolt. So just being so on it is so important.
Yeah, I mean, I remember talking to a friend of mine and there was a group of parents all sitting around the pool chatting, and the child was sort of playing in the shallow end that just got deeper and deeper and deeper. And before they knew it, the child was sort of slightly underwater. And I remember the mother saying to me, he said, "Mummy, I was shouting for you." And that sort of idea that it just happens so quickly just when you've taken your eyes off them. So especially at the end of the day, when it's so tempting to kind of have a glass of rosé and to not be focusing on the children, that's sort of crucial just to be on it. That even if it's, you know, one person's on duty for sort of half an hour, or, you know, but just that someone is watching your child.
Yeah. And also, if your child can't swim, then being very strict and completely non-negotiable on whatever buoyancy aid they're using. So if that's the water wings, or if that's the jacket or the shark fin or whatever it is that your child has, there is no negotiation around the fact that they have that on anywhere near the pool. It's not that, you know, they get to take it off when they've decided they're not going to go in, but they're still running around the outside. I think it's so important to be strict about that.
And probably when you're planning your holiday, just taking an extra buoyancy aid, because you just can't have a situation where the water wing is punctured or the swim vest is lost or is left in the car, that you've always got another option. Even if it means you've got more luggage, it's just one of those sort of crucial things to have.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
What about dry drowning? This idea that your child nearly drowns but doesn't drown, seems fine but then isn't.
This is very rare. This is not something that commonly happens. But I think the thing to remember is that, say you've pulled your child from the pool because they've gone under the water and they sort of cough a bit when they come up but seem fine. That doesn't mean that no damage has been done to their lungs and that they may not have symptoms afterwards that you need to watch out for. So I think if there's any incidents where there could have been any kind of water-related lung damage, or, you know, where you think, oh God, I don't know, could they have swallowed or breathed in a bit of water, then you have to keep a really, really close eye on them for the hour or two afterwards. Normally you would you'd notice things like them being much more drowsy than they normally would be, a bit more irritable or having sort of odd behavior that isn't normal for them, possibly difficulty breathing or also speaking, coughing a lot, chest pain. So for a child or an adult for that matter too, chest pain after that sort of thing's happened, all those things. I think just have a low threshold for taking them to hospital to be checked if there's been any incident where it could have been a dry drowning.
And presumably, if you weren't worried enough to take them to hospital, but you were just concerned, as most of us would be, would you see with your child that night?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, if you're concerned enough to sleep with them, I'd argue that potentially you're concerned enough to take them to be checked. But yes, sort of being close to them and being able to sort of pick up any new symptoms is always a good idea.
And what do they check for in hospital? Do they x-ray the lungs or do they do other tests just to ascertain that they're okay?
Yeah, they check the lungs, they check the brain, they check, you know, the general observations. So it may just be a case that they observe the child overnight in hospital with all the different monitors and that sort of thing. But it will depend on the nature of the injury and you know, how serious it could have been.
And you want to just go straight to hospital. What if would you be calling for an ambulance or would you just go straight to hospital?
I mean, listen, if your child has sort of actually drowned, has been unconscious, you've had to resuscitate them, you've got them back, then you would absolutely take them by ambulance to hospital. But if they're just not quite themselves after an incident that could have been a bit of water in the lungs, you could just drive them to hospital.
Okay. And in terms of, you know, summer holidays, we always have these aspirations that our children spend loads more time outside being active on their bikes. Yes, but bike injuries obviously go up in the summer. And obviously the most important thing is that children are always wearing a helmet, however hot it is, however much they don't want to wear their helmet. Helmets do help protect children significantly, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, with, you know, any sport or any activity where they're, you know, going fast, where they could fall down, injure their head, so important. And, you know, traumatic brain injury, you know, brain damage or even a fatal head injury is, kids riding bikes, it can be prevented by them wearing a helmet. So it's just crazy not to. So, you know, and you know, children ride their bikes in the summer, winter as well as the summer. But of course, in the summer, they've got far fewer clothes on, far fewer protective layers on. They're much more likely to not just injure their head, but also injure the rest of their body. You know, nasty cuts, nasty bony injuries, that sort of thing. And so, just being prepared for that is important.
I mean, it's a sort of rite of passage, isn't it, to sort of have that sort of big grazed elbow or grazed knee that looks horrific. What do you do with that? I mean, presumably you don't necessarily need to take them to hospital.
No. And, you know, grazes are common from before they can ride a bike. So most parents will be sort of pretty adept at starting to deal, you know, to look after those. So you just give it a good clean, make sure you've got any grit or dirt out of it.
You just use normal water if you don't have anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. You can just, you know, even a sort of high, you know, hose on it is absolutely fine if you're outside, just washing it essentially. Then puts, if you've got some antiseptic cream or some antiseptic spray on just to get rid of any bacteria that could have lodged in there. Most grazes don't need a plaster, just let them dry out and heal. But if it's a bit wetter or if it's got a deeper cut, then you'll put a plaster on it just to prevent anything else getting in there. So pretty straightforward really, the grazes. Broken bones. I mean, the thing with children and broken bones is that they can actually be sort of running around with a broken bone and not complaining that much about it, because their bones are a bit less brittle, I suppose, than ours. And you can get these, we call them green stick fractures, where they'll break, but it hasn't snapped. And they're pretty like the green stick, like a young shoot of a twig, you know, doesn't snap off, it sort of crushes a bit. And they, you know, you often see they're not really using it, but they're still running around playing in the garden. I think with bones, anything you think, oh God, could it be broken? Always go and get an x-ray in a child, because often it is.
And because if it's not broken, but it's not causing them a huge amount of kind of pain.
Oh, then they just carry on. Yeah. But you just need to exclude that it's not broken.
But if you didn't ascertain that it was broken and let them carry on, what would happen in the long term?
Depends where the break is, but if it's through a part of the bone that's still growing, it can stop that bone growing. So they could end up with that bone being shorter than it was supposed to be if it's through the what we call growth plate. So it's not just a case that, you know, it's not going to cause problems later on. In fact, more so for children than for adults.
Mm-hmm. Cars. I mean, obviously, we don't only use cars in the summer, but often when we're traveling, we're slightly more laissez-faire about car seats. It's so tempting when you've gone to like the car hire place and they don't have quite the right car seat for your child. You're like, oh, just stick them in. It sort of almost feels like the risks aren't there on holiday. Mm. But actually, it is so important, isn't it, to have your child in a proper car seat the whole time.
It's probably more important when you're on holiday because you're driving on roads. You're not used to. You're driving in a car that you're not used to. You're often driving on the other side of the road if you live in England. I think, you know, car safety is even more important on holiday. A lot of parents will choose to bring their car seat with them from England or from home so that they know it's the right car seat, they know it's the one they've chosen to spend money on and that it's safe. But obviously most car rental companies will hire them too. So just make sure it's the right one for your child. And yeah, exactly. Don't scrimp on it.
It probably is the best to bring your own. It's just, I've been in situations where, you know, you've ordered the car seat and then I remember once for one of my children who was like two, they delivered a sort of infant car seat. I was like, well, that's not going to work. But of course, yeah, they didn't have the other one there. So rather than, you know, to avoid that and risk just your child not being properly fastened in, it's probably,
yeah, I think especially for the, you know, for when they're little, once they're on just a booster seat, that's fine, you know, all they're having to do is be raised up a bit so that the seat belt is at the right height for them, but when they're still little, either in the infant car seat or in the child ones where you know it's got the head supports, then I would probably bring your own is the best.
So rashes, sorry.
No, I was going to say, just also with cars in the summer, you know, you do see a lot of sort of overheating injuries, you know, children left in the car just for 5-10 minutes to, you know, to pop out to get something just or supervised, or baby, you know, you've arrived at the house and, you know, the baby's asleep in the car, so you just let them sleep there. It's obviously safe to leave them. It's a private property. But they, you know, just be very careful about overheating. Cars get very hot very quickly. So that's another risk in the summer. Yeah.
Rashes are much, much more common in the summer. Is heat rash anything to worry about?
No, heat rash can be pretty dramatic, but it's nothing to, you know, it's usually harmless. Interestingly, though, babies will often get heat rash more frequently or more easily than adults because they can't control the temperature quite so well as adults can. So they'll sort of overheat and get the heat rash. But essentially, it's just an uncomfortable but usually harmless a rash, which is kind of gives you an itchy prickly feeling, and sometimes some swelling in the area that you've got it, and it will go away once the trigger has gone, but you know, so you just want to keep the child comfortable, you know, essentially cooling the skin down will help get rid of the heat rash. So that might be, you know, ice packs or cold flannels that have been in the freezer for a bit. Stop them scratching it. Sorry,
can you stick them in the swimming pool to cool their skin down? Does that work?
Cool them, absolutely. Anything to cool them down will help with the rash. So we'll just taking them indoors, out of the sun, avoiding scratching it. So you know, any skin that's irritated, if it's scratched, is going to prolong that irritation. So if they really are itchy, then patting it rather than scratching it can help. And then, you know, just the normal sort of relieving treatment, so calamine lotion, antihistamines if it's really itchy, you know, that sort of thing will help. But it's nothing to worry about. Again, it looks quite dramatic, but it will get better.
And if your child has got a rash and they're really hot, is the likelihood is it is heat rash and it's nothing to worry about?
Yeah, I mean, as long as they're not ill, you want to be sure that that's what it is. But usually if you take them in and, you know, within a couple of hours of being out of the sun and cool, that it's better, then that will, you know, that will tell you that that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. So what about heat stroke? If your child has heat rash, is that the same thing as heat stroke, or will they get heat stroke, or is it something that's totally different?
So they're similar in that they both come from being overheated and being exposed to too much sun or too much heat without your body being able to control it properly. But heat stroke is the next level up. So you could get heat stroke without having got heat rash. But if your child with heat rash is then kept in the sun, they might well go on to develop heat stroke. It's something called heat exhaustion. And it's less common in.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In younger children, because they're not, you know, hopefully not going to be in that situation, but, you know, older children who are less supervised might get symptoms of heat stroke. So, you know, they get a headache or they're getting dizzy. Quite often they'll feel quite sick or quite nauseous. They'll look ill, and they'll often get quite pale and clammy, or sweat an awful lot. Their pulse or their kind of breathing rate will go up. They might even get a temperature and be sort of, you know, up sort of 38, not usually much higher than 38 degrees in heat stroke, but they might get a temperature as their body is overheating, and they might be very thirsty. So, you know, it's the same symptoms in adults and children, but obviously in children, you know, you they don't always know what to do themselves, so you'll have to do it for them. And the main thing with heat stroke or heat exhaustion is just to cool them down. I mean, that is the treatment. So there's lots of different ways, but any way you can think of to cool them down will help treat those symptoms. And normally, after about half an hour to an hour of cooling them, their symptoms will have got better, and you'll know that that's what it was that was making them feel so awful.
So obviously moving to a cool place, but could they be in a cold bath or being put in the swimming pool? Is that probably the most effective way of cooling them down?
Yeah. I mean, I think they may not feel like getting in a cold bath or getting in a swimming pool. They usually feel pretty awful. So it may just be that you take them inside, you put a fan on them, you cool them with cold water flanneling or sponging, give them plenty to drink. You know, the sort of sports drinks are good, or diuretic type electrolyte rehydration is good. Ice packs on the sort of pulse points, all that sort of thing can help cool them down. So it's, you know, it's not serious, and you know, as long as they're not left in the sun, but if they're brought inside and cooled down, then they'll feel better.
And do they get it more quickly than we do because they're smaller and more vulnerable? So essentially, if we could have like a day of sun on the beach and still be fine after it, might that just be too much for children?
Yeah, I mean, children tend to get it less because we as parents are more on it. So we'll have the hats on them, we'll have them told that we're going to come and just play in the shade rather than playing in the sun or eating their lunch in the shade. So it's probably most common in that sort of early adulthood when you're sort of used to being looked after by your parents, age of 16, 17, 18, but you're not, you're on holiday with your friends and no one's sort of telling you to do all these sensible things, that's when you're most likely to get it.
And I suppose then being aware of sort of sun safety, because, you know, whether it's wanting to prevent heat rash, heat stroke, but also then, you know, making sure that you've got adequate sun cream on is something that's really important in the summer.
Well, it's probably, you know, as a more general health prevention, you know, preventing your child getting burnt or having too much sun on their skin is one of the most important things you can do to help them in later life. Because, you know, the more times your child is burnt in childhood, the more likely they are to develop skin cancer in their life. And especially burnt to peeling, you know, if it's one of the questions the dermatologist will ask with a, you know, if you're 50 and you've got a lesion that could be skin cancer, is how many times in your life have you been burnt to peeling? So it's just so important to use high factor sun cream everywhere. Don't forget the backs of the ears, top of the feet, you know, places that sometimes we might forget to put the sun cream on. Reapply it after swimming, reapply it after toweling. You know, keep the hats on them, or, you know, the ones with the neck protectors if they're in you know, really hot sun. Put sun suits on if you're in countries where you know the sun is particularly strong. You know, for babies, they just really shouldn't be in the sun at all, and they don't need to be. You know, have sun shades on the pushchairs, keep them out of direct sunlight all the time.
And is it true that if they're playing in like a paddling pool or in the water or in the sea, the sun is stronger because it's reflected off the water?
Well, it reaches areas that it wouldn't reach if they weren't in the water, because it's being reflected off the water. So that's where their face will get burnt, under the hat, for example, or the bottom of their chin, or the backs of their legs, or, you know, whichever position they're in. So yeah, in the sun, in the water is more risky than in the sun out of the water.
I mean, I always found that taking just more sun cream than we anticipated on holidays was absolutely crucial, because one of the big mistakes we make is that we just don't quite apply enough. You need quite a lot of sun cream for it to be properly protective, and it needs to be reapplied quite frequently, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, we've done a whole podcast a while ago, haven't we, on just sunscreen and children. But, you know, working out which sun cream your child will tolerate you to put on them effectively, you know, so if it's the spray aerosol ones, or if it's the creams, or if it's the sticks, or whatever it is, what, you know, as they get older and there's more negotiation involved, like, work out with them which one you're going to use and use it. Because often it's the sort of worry, you know, the sort of anticipation of the fight that your child's going to put up because they don't want sun cream on that stops you perhaps reapplying it or putting it on properly in the first place. And that's one of the most important things.
And it's so difficult because children are a blimming nightmare. I mean, you would have thought that I was torturing my children when it came to putting on sunscreen. The fuss that was, you know, it's sticky, it's cold. I'm like, it's not the end of the world and it's protecting your skin. But it was such a hassle. And I think what I learned pretty quickly was that they had to understand that this was not a negotiation. They were having sunscreen on, and that was that. And actually then that made it a little bit easier. Just, you know, I just said, we are not leaving this house until you've got this on.
Yeah. And giving them some autonomy and some choice in that will help with that conversation.
Yeah.
And in terms of what type of sun cream rather than whether or not they have it.
Yeah. So choosing the non-sticky one or the.
Yeah. Choosing the, you know, whatever, even the picture on the bottle, if they like that, you know, there's children, you know, there's all sorts of things that will sway them.
Yeah. And also then giving them a bit of screen time. I remember eventually I just put mine in front of Peppa Pig or whatever it was while I just did it. And then you can just get it done really, really well. Ideally while they're naked, isn't it? You know, with children.
Yes.
You want a really good session while they're naked, so that when you're out and about, you're sort of topping up that you've done. I even just did the bottom underneath the swimmers, you know, everywhere possible.
Well, especially when they're little and they often are running around naked by the pool or whatever, you just want to make sure it's all protected.
I find it very difficult to be in the sun without sunglasses, but my children don't seem to have that problem. Is it important that they wear sunglasses, or are some people's eyes much more sensitive than others?
I think definitely there are some people who have more sensitive eyes than others, and it is sometimes hard to get children to wear sunglasses. But often, again, we'll be sort of adults will be on a sunbed and, you know, reading a book or something, whereas children aren't, you know, they're running around, they often aren't, you know, looking at direct, you know, not looking at the sun, but they don't have so much sun in their eyes. So yes, I think a lot of children don't particularly like to wear sunglasses, and I think, you know, you can encourage it, but it's, you know, if they're living in a country that's very sunny, it'll become part of their routine. If they're not, it's probably not something that's going to bother them too much.
Until they want fashion glasses, it's probably something that's a bit difficult to do.
Exactly.
And hat makes a huge difference, actually. I find having a sort of hat over. And again, you know, your tip of, you know, giving them some autonomy rather than just going to buy the hat, let them choose their hat that they want so that there's not going to be a problem with sort of wanting to wear it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And most children, it's a hat or sunglasses. They don't need both because the hat is shading their eyes.
I know that some sort of clothes and hats say, you know, SPF 30 on them. But, I mean, presumably you're going to get quite a lot of protection from just a normal T-shirt, or is that something that is dangerous?
No, I think hats is one thing because the hair is protecting us too. So unless you're bald, you know, it doesn't matter so much about the SPF on the hat itself. But T-shirts, the sun can get through T-shirts that aren't SPF more than it can, or the UV rays that are harmful to the skin can get through thin cotton more easily than it will through an SPF. So if you're using that instead of sun cream, it should be a proper sunsuit or SPF type layer.
Mm-hmm. But also understanding that you can't really use it instead of sun cream because you can't cover every part of your child's body.
Yeah.
How common is it that children are allergic to sun creams?
It's more that children have more sensitive skin. So a bit like they're more likely to get, they're more likely to get a bit of a reaction from an insect bite than an adult is. They're more likely to get a bit of a redness or rash from a sun cream than an adult is. So you just want to use the hypoallergenic ones or the ones that are designed for babies, and most of them will be absolutely fine.
And probably if you're going on holiday, it might be worth just trying the sun cream out before you go, rather than that's the only sun cream you bring out and then you can't find one that's, you know, really sensitive for your child.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely worth doing that.
Now, I always recommend traveling with a bit of a first aid kit, not that you can sort of replace hospital. And also mindful of the fact that you have so much luggage when you're traveling with children, you don't necessarily want a whole sort of first aid bag. But what would you say were the sort of essential basics to take away with you?
Yeah, I think definitely worth bringing a basic sort of over the counter, you know, pharmacy bought first aid kit, which has got the plasters and the antiseptic cream and the sling and the, you know, little things that you're likely to need that will be quite useful, tweezers to get out splinters, and, you know, you just don't want to be having to find a pharmacy and then, you know, driving there to try and get these little things, which is so easy to bring. So I definitely would do that, and then I'd bring a thermometer because you never know. You almost always want to check your child's temperature. If they've got, you know, they're too hot from the sun, you don't know if it's the sun or if it's that they're ill. So bring your thermometer. Bring your simple painkillers. Actually, I often say bring those in those little sachets on the plane, because if they've got sore ears on the plane or have any sort of pain, you know, you can give them something on the plane. You might want to think about bringing a couple of little sachets of rehydration solution so that you can give them that if they've got a diarrheal illness or if they're dehydrated at all. Antihistamines, because, you know, of course, if they get stung, bitten by an insect or stung by nettles or, I don't know, and have a bit more of a reaction than you'd expect them to have, then giving them either antihistamine cream or oral antihistamines, the type you'd use for hay fever. So for babies, that can be sort of Pyriton or something, but there's loads of different types you can use. Definitely worth having those. What else would it be quite useful to bring? Creams, I guess, you know, I usually bring, and this will depend on the age of your child, but, you know, the over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream, 1%. You know, if you've got it there and your child's got a rash, you can always speak to your doctor and they can say, yes, use that or don't use that. Probably something for most first aid kits come with a sort of little eye wash or, you know, sort of eye bath. So if your child gets, you know, sprays, I don't know, anti-mozzie spray in their eye or whatever, you can, you know, give a proper eye bath. That's pretty much it.
You consider bringing,
if your child has antibiotics, if your child, no, I mean, it's a difficult one because it's not just that there is antibiotics for every infection, it will be a specific antibiotic for a specific infection. So unless your child is really prone to something that needs antibiotics or is, you know, a child that constantly gets a certain type of illness that your doctor knows about, then it's definitely worth having a chat with them before, especially if you're going away longer, and say, listen, can you just prescribe this so I've got it just in case and I can use it if, you know, and then if I call you and chat it through, then that can be quite useful again, rather than trying to find a pharmacy. But our bottom line is, if your child actually gets ill while you're away, you want them to be seen by a doctor. You don't want to just be guessing and giving medicines that you've brought along just in case. So you've got to be pretty sure.
Probably worth thinking, where would you go? Is there a children's A&E? Is there an English-speaking doctor? You know, especially if you're either really worried or your child is sort of prone to illnesses. I mean, I know that, you know, we see a lot of people on the bump class and it's their, you know, first holiday away. Very often first-time parents are quite anxious. And you'd probably then choose somewhere where you're sort of confident in terms of sort of health.
Yeah, you want to go somewhere, like if it's a hotel, where they have a hotel doctor who can come and see your baby. And I'd say especially under 6 months, at the, you know, like we in our podcast we did about common childhood illnesses, you know, a temperature in a baby under 6 months really does need to be seen by a doctor. So even if it ends up not being anything serious, you need a doctor to actually come and examine your baby. So if you're going on holiday with a 6 month old or younger, then that's even more important to be close to somewhere that a pediatric doctor can come and see you. You can go and see them.
And there are obviously loads of, you know, remote access now to doctors. So presumably it's sometimes really great to be able to organise a Zoom call with your doctor to see whether or not you need sort of hospital treatment, because no one wants to go and sit in queue in A&E for 3 hours for something that could potentially be resolved by the phone. So just seeing, especially if you've got a private doctor, if they'll do a Zoom consultation, or that's probably advice.
Yeah, or even you know, even your NHS doctor would probably be able to do a telephone call. Or yeah, so there's definitely, you can usually set something like that up. But with the babies particularly, then nothing beats actually seeing the baby and examining the baby. So definitely having that backup is important.
And you mentioned insect bites. Those are obviously a big part of often sort of going away. I mean, mosquito bites, very common, very irritating, but they're rarely problematic, are they?
Yeah, well, the key is to try not to get them. So especially with if you've got a little baby, you know, make sure you've got a mosquito net for the cot, a mosquito net for the pram. If you've got older children, that you're bringing all the right kinds of insect repellents and you know, having either bed mosquito nets or staying in a place where the windows have the barriers for the mosquitoes and insects. Because the idea, you know, ideally you just don't get them, because it can really ruin a holiday if they're covered in mosquito bites. But then you just bring along the right kinds of treatments for them. So again, the antihistamines, the creams, you know, that you can get those little zapper devices that will help with the itch.
Yeah, they deliver
the cold sprays.
My children found those great, actually. They sort of itched without itching it, and they made the itching
exactly.
Away.
Yeah. So that's that. And then if it's a bit more of a serious bite, if it's a bee or a wasp or something, they'd be quite, you know, we need to give them painkillers as well, and then just make sure they're not having more of a reaction than they'd expect, than you'd expect. And if so, give them some antihistamine as well. It's very useful to kind of calm that allergic response.
And this is going to sound like a really stupid question, but what is more of a reaction than you'd expect?
So, you know, if you get a wasp bite, but then on your arm, but the whole arm swells up, your hand's gone all puffy, or, you know, you're not having difficulty breathing, or you're not having any sort of anaphylaxis, but it's more of a reaction than you'd expect. You'd want to treat that rather than, you know, just a sore wasp bite, which any of us might get.
And would oral antihistamine help with that?
Yeah, we would. It might need more as well as that, but that will definitely be the first thing you do.
And obviously, mosquito repellents are kind of full of nasty stuff because you're trying to get the mosquitoes not to want to bite you. Could you put that on a newborn baby? I guess it's that sort of weighing up risk versus benefit.
Yeah, exactly. So you can get much gentler insect repellents, but that are they're generally less effective than the ones that are a bit more toxic. So if you're going somewhere where the mosquitoes themselves aren't dangerous, so don't carry disease, most parents would choose to use the gentler mosquito repellents, or just try and protect their child from being bitten in the first place. And if you're going somewhere where the mosquitoes are carrying potentially very nasty disease, then you might choose to use a stronger one, despite the baby being younger. So that's about weighing it up, really.
Yeah, I mean, and presumably too, anything that's sort of available on the market is sort of broadly, it's safe. I mean, my recommendation would be to always bring some of the strong stuff, because even if you're not in a sort of malarial area, if your child is literally being bitten to death, you might think, do you know what, I am going to use the slightly stronger one that says obviously it's appropriate for sort of children. But at least then you have it, rather than thinking, oh, well, you know, yeah, citronella is not cutting it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Always be over prepared rather than under prepared. You can always make the decision then and there.
And I suppose taking on board that a holiday with children, especially if it's your first one, it's full on. It's not really a holiday, is it? That first holiday.
No, a holiday with the children, especially as they get, you know, to the toddler age, is just really just a change of scene and a bit harder work because you haven't got all your stuff that you usually rely on. But, you know, it's obviously lovely to get away. And I mean, I would definitely save the kind of adventure holidays for when they're a bit older and go and do Bucket and Spades when they're little, or go and see family who can help look after them and enjoy being with your child, give you a bit of a break.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, having sort of planned so many holidays, a bit of help on holiday is so important, as much about keeping your child safe as it is about allowing you to have a holiday. Because actually, keeping your child safe, whether they're on bikes or by the pool or by the sea or in the sun, it's kind of full on. And if you can, you know, go somewhere where you can put them in a kids club for a couple of hours where they're going to be really well supervised and you get the time to have a bit of time off, or have a little bit of help on holiday where it's a couple of hours where someone just can come out, someone else can come and sit and watch them by the pool.
Or go to family, as I say, who will help look after them, or go on holiday with friends with the same age children, so you can sort of rotate adults to be the one looking after the children, you know, so the other ones can have some time off and do that in rotation. So there's lots of ways to do it. But yeah, remember, you know, just bear in mind before you go that it's quite hard work.
But it is fun. We're sort of bad mouthing holidays. It is lovely to get away. And I just think you have to be realistic about what to expect and where you're going.
Yeah, exactly.
Kiara, thank you so much as ever. I hope you all have lovely summer holidays. And thank you for downloading this episode of The Parenthood. You can subscribe, rate and review wherever you found this podcast. I'm on Instagram at marina.fogel. You can continue the conversation there. But in the meantime, from Kiara and me, thanks for listening.
Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.